We're recording. Hello, hello, and welcome. I'm Nick.
Whoa, you're just doing it.
I'm on it, and I want to go play Skullgirls. Hello, hello, and welcome. I'm Nick.
I'm Ryan.
And welcome to the Leaku Studios podcast. Roundtable number 26. Spielbunny 2011 Spring Session.
A podcast for the week of April the 7th.
Perfect.
Hey, Nick. How's it going?
Getting a little better.
It's been a while since we've been here in the studio.
Yeah, it's kind of nice. I've kind of been itching to do things again.
It's a lovely day here in Warwick, New York.
Yeah. It's Tuesday.
Hey, everybody.
Okay, so I wanna talk about this. I am itching.
Okay. Like, he just wants to jump into it.
Yeah.
I was maybe gonna rap for a while about cicadas, but just fucking do it.
Nah, we'll get to that.
Okay.
It'll happen.
I'm sure.
So
you've been on assignment for a couple days now.
A week.
Sure, that's a few days.
Something like that. It's a handful.
And you've just returned and are itching to tell us.
I'm itching for a couple of reasons. Wait. the main thing is, over the weekend, I was at Spielbunny.
Mm-hmm.
For those who don't know, Spielbunny is...
From the German for Games Albany.
Yes. Yes. Because it is like a Albany-based small gathering of game designers and playtesters?
Developers.
Yeah. But it's all for board games, which I guess when you say developers, you have to make that clear. But like it's this really small gathering. You know, dudes are running it out of their houses and they like switch off. We had meatballs for dinner.
Cool.
Everybody chipped in like $10.
Oh, dude.
Yeah, no, it was really cool. But like... We had a mixer. I went with Arcade Rumble. There were some dudes who, you know, one dude had made a game that, like, he sort of turned into a game out of something he was playing with his kids while they were bored at a diner. Some other people were, like, actively being like, what if we combine this game and then put, like, a theme around it? And that was really cool. And one dude was like, on the way over, I just started saying I am Spartacus a lot, and then we put together some real broken rules for it, so let's play that. And then we did that.
Is that one of the ones you can talk about?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then also, like, there was, like, a dude or two who have been working on their games over the course of nearly a decade.
Mm.
And it was, like, a real fun experience, and I thought today I'd, share it with everybody. This would have been a roundtable if it wasn't for the fact that, you know, since these are, like, actual sort of developers and this is what they do for a living, I don't want to... These are all works in progress, and I don't want to give away much on the games that, you know, I didn't get explicit permission to really talk about.
Yeah, yeah.
So I have to dance around some things, and I don't think it leads to proper discussion, but, like, I got to talk about it because there was some cool stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know where to start. Oh, wait. I had a note.
For the listeners at home, Nick is now going through the pockets of his torn shorts.
Only the torniest.
His shorts have sort of slits in the front about halfway down the little pocket pouch. It kind of looks like maybe a shorter man was trying to make cut-off shorts out of his shorts, but then Nick caught him and stopped it.
I mean, you pretty much nailed it on the head there.
Oh, okay, cool.
Woo! Nope, that's notes about where I can find Kaiser in Fallout New Vegas. I'm gonna punch him.
Oh, cool. He's a jerkus.
Yeah. I just found Benny, and I punched him, and now I don't care about...
And the Jets?
Yeah, I punched all of them.
Okay.
And the Sharks.
What about the Kings?
They keep giving me money.
Oh, cool.
Actually, no, they keep giving me food. But I'll take it.
What about that, like those Ponzi aristocratic cannibal gang? What about them?
I don't know them.
Oh. Have you met, like, a Ponzi aristocrat gang?
No.
Oh, okay. When you do, they're secret cannibals.
That was Fallout 3, I believe.
It's real on the nose.
Or maybe not.
No, I think it's in Vegas.
Okay.
There was like a random, like, well, not random, but, you know, there was some little town that you could find in Fallout 3 that was like mad cannibals. Just keeping people in the basement.
Yeah. Okay, so what I have here, there is a website for Spielbany. It's spielbany.com. SpielBany.com. And so...
Okay.
So you can go there, and actually it's like free to sign up and register if you're in the Albany area, you want to go. They hold this meeting for like, you know, four times a year, like every change of seasons. And they've been doing it for like 9 years now or something.
Cool.
Still running it out of dudes' houses, and they want it that way.
They don't want to like rent out the local hall.
No, like they want it in people's houses because it keeps the sort of atmosphere they're going for.
Okay.
Like, because that was the thing. Like, everybody was friendly. Like, we just went and played games. I swear, when I walked in, it felt exactly like it feels walking into Anders' house.
Oh, yeah?
At some point, that like, I was smelling Anders' house. Like, there's that sort of ambient smell that's like, just like, oh, yeah, this is Anders' house. I'm not in Anders' house. Wait, what's going on?
The way you're describing it, it makes me picture, like... a bunch of mismatched armchairs in, like, a nice basement.
Yeah, kind of. Like, we were set up, like, across two rooms with, like, three different tables and, like, couches and just, like, everything was thrown around. Well, not, like, thrown around, but just, like we have set the space up for people using what we had in this house that we live in.
Mm.
But, yeah, so one of the last posts on this website... is they put up a preview of all the games that were there. So I'm just going to go down that and, you know, I can read what they have on here and give you what I heard about this.
Because give us the inside scoop.
Yeah, because I didn't play all of these. I don't know if all of these were even touched, but some of these even got, like, real fantastic descriptions to them.
Okay.
So I'm just going to go down the list. The first game we have here is Do You Know Your Neighbor? A strategic party game of deduction, teamwork, and sabotage, all wrapped into a neighborly theme.
Did you play this game?
I did play this game.
It kind of sounds like that group therapy game.
It wasn't.
Okay.
Sitting around the table, basically what happened was, they said it was Guess Who mixed with the Resistance by way of Clue.
The Resistance?
Yeah. The Resistance, I believe, is some sort of werewolf-like.
Okay.
Something like a K-Bang or a, or actually K-Bang was the, Bang is the name of the game. It comes in a bullet case. It's really cool, actually.
Okay.
K-Bang
is the Korean version?
It could possibly
be. That's what they call a net cafe over there.
Yeah?
A bang.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but like, basically what this game was, is like, you got this, like, big sheet of people.
Okay.
It basically, the idea is like everybody is all the players are people who are living together in an apartment building, and each one of them are taking on the roles of one of the characters.
Okay. And these are like set characters in the box.
They're set characters because they each have a specific alignment.
Okay.
There are kind neighbors, wicked neighbors, and fickle neighbors.
Okay.
And
do these combine? Like, are there kind and fickle? Are there
no.
wicked and fickle? Okay. So this is a tripartite.
Yes. The and they're also broken up by, like, what their interests are. So, like, you know, these are kind neighbors who are interested in health. These are fickle neighbors who are interested in diplomacy, stuff like that. There's, like, five groups of those.
Okay.
Everyone is given a character at random. You don't know who each other person is.
Mm.
And then the basic loop of the game is, at first, you trade clue cards, which have, like, questions on them, like, are you a man? Does your name start with A? Stuff like that.
Okay.
And you get to pass one to any other player at the start of the turn, and they will answer yes or no to you only. And, like, after the course of rounds, you get a chance to try and, you know, pick out and declare who they are.
Do you just have, like, little tokens that say yes or no on them, and you just kind of, like, surreptitiously...
No.
Because that would be rad.
That would be pretty good.
For the listener at home, I sort of cupped my hand secretly and then opened.
You did sort of clamshell right on your hand right there. So then after this whole clue thing to try and figure out who people are, then what happens is there's a situation deck of things that can come up for people living. So like one was like a water main break. One was, you know, a neighbor has pneumonia. One was, you know, somebody's house is on fire, something like that.
Domestic crises.
Yeah, various domestic crises. Exactly. And the way that it works is that the group of all the players is split into two teams.
Okay.
The first team, and they each work. They each deal with a different situation. And then, so the trick is that what you're trying to do, the crises are like of varying scales, and basically you're all secretly voting on whether to do the kind thing or the wicked thing.
Okay.
And depending on the scale, you need like more votes to one side or the other in order to choose which one.
Sure.
And so like, you know, one card was like, yeah, you need three votes either way to take that action. So if you don't, and then the way that it goes is that like, if there's more, if there's enough kind, it goes in the kind pile. If there's enough wicked, it goes in the wicked pile. If there's not enough to hit the threshold, it goes in the fickle pile.
Huh.
And what's going on is like, it's basically a three-team game with, like, all the fickle are on the same team, all the wicked are on the same team, all the kind are on the same team.
Okay.
So basically what you're doing is, like, you're trying to break the group into similarly minded people, and then, so that way you can, you know, to try and, like, massage the voting to happen to the way that you want it for your position.
Then... So is there some kind of win condition about, like, filling up one of these piles?
Yes, it's like, depending on whatever, like, the threshold was, when that pile adds up to 15 in one pile, that wins. Okay. There's also a thing about...
What's the purpose of guessing who is who, then?
It's,
Just to sort of predict what their goal is?
To predict what their goal is, but also if you correctly recognize somebody, they flip their card over, it becomes public knowledge... You get a free situation card that you can stick into one of your piles whenever you want.
Oh, okay.
So, like, the way I actually won that game...
But you'd pretty much be revealing yourself at that point, too.
You have to reveal yourself to put it in a pile. Also, if you guess incorrectly, you're revealed and can't guess again. You can't guess if you've been revealed.
Huh.
But, so, like, the way that I won the game is I revealed two people, and then, like, that gave me enough cards that I just threw it into my pile and won for my team.
Oh, okay. It's like dumping all the twos at the end of the game, an asshole.
Yeah. Pretty much. But yeah, that wasn't too bad.
Huh. So, like, how dependent is your success on knowing who all the characters in the box are? Like, I could imagine, like, coming into the game, not having played it before, and, like, just going to guess, like, are you Steve Dave? I don't know who any of the names in the box are.
No, there's, like, big reference sheet of, like, every character in the game,
oh, okay.
What their alignment is and what their interest is.
So you can, that's just on the table all the time.
Yeah. Okay. And like everybody gets one. And it also has like a reference sheet.
Oh, okay. So it's kind of like the little flippy boards from,
Catan?
No, the game that you referenced in the beginning as this being slightly inspired by.
Guess who? It's kind of like that. yeah. And like, it was pretty good. Like, and so the other interesting thing about Spielbunny is that since this is like all game makers, like every game that gets played is immediately followed by how can we make this better discussion?
Yeah, because
and that was really refreshing.
Ooh boy.
Yeah. So like the thing that we were talking about that game was like, it like we felt like the two parts of it, like the like guessing and trying to figure out didn't feed into the main part of it well enough. Like, basically, it was like, you were like, you're playing, you know, a Clue Guess Who minigame in order to get a reward that you only get to play at the end of the game, really.
Yeah.
But all in all, like, it was pretty fun.
Yeah.
Like we played it, we got through it, it was fine.
I really like a werewolf sort of game with, like, hidden roles and everything like that.
Yeah.
And the sort of three-way, like, competition thing is... Like, I suppose that sort of exists in games like that, where you have, like, oh, well, these are just the, you know, the regular townspeople, and these are the aggressors, and these are the people that want to stop the aggressors.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it seems kind of interesting that, like...
All of them are trying to massage a certain way.
Yeah, yeah. And one of them is just, like, you know, opposes extremism. It's just like, it's my goal to keep everyone indecisive.
Well, that was a weird thing about that, because, like, so the way that it works is that the way that the groups are split up is that there's a, like, first turn token, or, like, turn leader token, and that gets passed around, and whoever the turn leader is gets to pick the team for the first situation, and then just everyone else takes the other situation.
So you basically get to pick, like, you, and you, you're with me?
Yeah.
Interesting.
And, like,
Now I see where, like, the knowledge of, like, you know, what your alignment is.
Because it was kind of weird, because, like, if you're playing a fickle person, it's bad to just, like, pick other fickle people,
because
then you're, like, blindly, like, just, like, I don't want to go either way, but, like, it's just a thing, like, what is it? There's four different kinds of cards. There's, like, a one-point swing and a two-point swing card that you could play, and it's possible to play two cards in a round, but you only ever get one card back. So, like, as you be more aggressive with your voting, you lose the
later opportunities.
Yeah.
How, like, let's say you do have a like, a party, a voting party full of fickle people. Like, how much collusion is allowed? Like, are the votes, like, enforced to be secret?
Yeah, like, everybody votes in secret.
But, you know, if somebody just says, like, hey, I'm voting yes, you vote no, like that's not done?
Yeah.
Okay.
It would kind of be bad to do that, because then you're kind of giving away your position, and...
Yeah. So it's sort of enforced by the game itself, rather than, like, an explicit rule.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is weird, because, like, I'd actually be sort of interested to, like, see what happens if that game went on for too long, because it's either, like... It's this weird thing, like, once you know...
Yeah, like, eventually everyone's state will be known.
Yeah, like once everybody knows everything, then it starts to get kind of boring, and it's kind of luck of the draw, but the game doesn't last that long. Like, it ends before it gets to that point. Which, again, is why, you know, like, it takes long enough, like, for the guessing thing that, like there was only, like, two guesses before the final round of, like, revealing people.
Oh, really?
And then, like, there was, like, five on, like, the last go-around, and I did two in my turn to do the win.
Jeez.
Yeah. But, so that was that game. They're gonna do some revisions of it. Apparently they, like, submitted it to a publisher, and they turned them down and said that it wasn't sexy enough, in the sense that, like, it didn't have, like, they probably wouldn't appeal to gamers, and I was like, you're real close to, like, appealing to the kind of people who like Friends?
Yeah,
like sitcom kind of people.
I don't know. I would like to have that game.
Yeah, no, it's not bad. But yeah, so
weird.
That game's probably going to get a couple of changes before we see a final version of it that you can
sex
purchase.
It up a bit.
Yeah,
that.
Well, apparently, by sex it up a bit, they basically mean make it fantasy themed,
or just show it to another publisher. That's a weird
maybe. Yeah. Well, let's see here. So, yeah, that was that game. I want to keep these sort of short.
Brief,
so that way,
yeah, sure.
There was Fantasy Turf Wars, which...
That sounds like a custom game in StarCraft.
Let me read you.
Is this a bunker control game?
No. I'll give you an idea in a second.
Okay.
So, it's the same as made by the same guys as the last one. I will give them their propers. This is Josh DiGregorio and Phil Cartagena. I believe Phil was wearing a shirt for his thing, and it's Cray Cray Games.
Okay.
I believe. Let's see here. Fantasy Turf Wars, a lighthearted take on strategic fantasy conquest game with alternate ways of winning for the faint of heart who don't like wiping other players off the map. Kind of like Small World meets Rex.
I don't know what either of those things are.
Me neither. See, I saw it and immediately thought, this is like... Cosmic Encounters with a, like, streamlined Risk type board.
Okay.
Because, like, this was a game about, like, the number of troops plus the number on your card that you play simultaneously determines outcomes. But then there was a lot to it of, like, there was a board with, like, five different terrain types, and there were race cards who had, like, you know, each one had a unique ability, each one had a unique home turf, each one had a nemesis.
Are we talking like human, elf, dwarf?
Yes, angels, demons, centaurs, lizard people. They had like 25 different races, which was kind of great.
Oh, okay.
And that just like from a development standpoint, it was kind of cool because they had like these guys, they had like like nice printed things. So like they had like nice printed cards, but then like, you know, a printed out game board because they were getting their pieces from different places.
Yeah, yeah.
But like their card, like some of them had like near final art on them. Some of them were pencil drawings on the card. But so like there was a lot of ways to win. So like it's either wipe people off the map and be the last one left. There was, if you are the only one controlling your, like, all of the spaces of your home turf at the start of your turn, you win. If there are, like, a secret win condition deck, and you get those, and you can buy more secret win conditions as the game goes on.
What?
So then you can reveal that you won that way.
Interesting.
If your nemesis is in the game, because, like, each race has a nemesis race, and it's sort of like a big chain.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
If your nemesis race is in the game, you can wipe just them off the board and win.
Oh.
So, like, there was a lot of ways to win. There was certain... The only thing that was really weird about it was that there were action cards to be like, you know, this turn you can attack two desert territories.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to, like, buy more action cards. You had to buy to refill the combat deck with numbers in it, because like you don't redraw cards. You have to buy, like, you draw two cards, you get to keep one of them, and you have to buy every time you want to refill your deck, except for zero. You never discard your zero,
so you can always make a shitty attack if you
yes.
have no other options.
And like it seemed pretty complicated, but like I enjoy Cosmic Encounter, and they're definitely building on that. And like I said, I didn't get to play that one, so there's probably other elements to it that I'm just not getting a grasp of. Hmm. But like, it definitely seemed interesting, and they were playing that for a good long while, and I would not mind playing that.
Yeah, that sounds like a game I'd like to play.
Yeah.
Like, even in like the original Risk, like my favorite way to play that was with, like, you know, the secret win condition cards and everything like that.
Yeah.
And so just kind of having this pre-built system of like, okay, when you have, you know, this faction and this faction and this faction and these secret win condition cards in play, and just all of these, like, you know, some win conditions that everyone knows, some win conditions that you know, and stuff like that. That
yeah.
seems like it'd be a really interesting game.
You know, it seemed like it was complicated enough to be interesting.
And the, like, very, like, that stuff seems complicated, but the fact that, like, combat is decided by, nope, I had more troops, or nope, I had a higher number on my card.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not, like, luck-based or dice rolling or anything. It's just like, nope, I won.
Yeah.
You know, just very simple and fast.
Yeah. Also was Arcade Rumble by Nick Korn.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What's that game about?
It's sort of like a pre-built deck game where you're sort of going back and forth to take control of machines in an arcade and hold the high scores. But you're also, like, pulling out sweet moves, like doing some sweet drifts with Mega Man. It's not in the best state yet, but, you know, it's working on it. And, there was some good feedback on it, so I think we'll be seeing a new revision of that soon.
Cool.
Would you like to hear some specifically?
I don't know. Would you like to share some specifically?
Yeah, no, like, that was, like, the first time we broke out into, like, three separate groups,
mm-hmm.
so I didn't get as much sort of exposure and feedback as I would have liked to get. Then again, from the little I did get, it's clear that, like, the thing that I want is with the way that, like, the rules play, and it's about, like, where can I eke out one more point than my opponent in this, like, since that's what I want, but that's complicated, it's not beginner-friendly.
Mm.
So, like, I'm pretty sure the next step in that is I'm going to do two things. I'm going to create a starter kit, which is going to be, like, a bunch of easy cards to get a sense of it, and just, like, two identical decks that you can play against each other, and that's just the way it starts. Just, like, a very simplified version. Just say, here it is, here you go, and here's the rules. You can understand it now. And then I'll create two actually pre-built advanced decks.
Okay.
It's like, The way we kind of tried playing it was, I didn't even split it into separate decks. It was just one big deck that we all drew from.
Oh, really?
Which
okay.
was weird because in drawing our hand, seven machines hit the board.
Were you playing with, like, seven people?
No. It was a three-player game, but
okay.
just, like, it... Something went wrong. But, you know, there's probability that's what happened.
Yeah.
And I still don't, like, any of the suggestions for other ways to bring machines into the arcade yet, so.
Okay.
But, yeah, so that's, like, so, you know, create a starter deck and then create advanced deck that have, like, the complicated mechanics I'm thinking even if I pick like three mechanics to use in a deck, but then just make them complete, make them so that we can play them against each other, and then from there maybe build like three or four decks, and then I'm pretty close to having what I envisioned.
Yeah.
And also it'll be more solid, so you know I can write rules and just be like, all right, here's all the cards, here's the rules. And basically put it at a point where I can put it in somebody else's hands and not have to be there to explain everything.
Mm. That's probably a really important step.
Yeah. Which, I don't know, I'm pretty close to the way that the rules work. Like, it's like I can say, like, here's how you play and then go for it. But definitely something to the effect of, like, the first game you play with new people just takes a long time because everybody's reading, like, what are these cards? What is even possible?
Yeah,
I need
to
figure everything out.
Well, I mean, the first game of any new game that you play is always rough.
But, like, especially in the game, like, I'm trying to make where it's a lot about, like, fiddly little mechanics and, like, you know, eking out one point or which rules are we overriding and which ones don't matter because there's so many.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes the more I think about it, the more I find myself falling into the, like, what do you call it? The Magic the Gathering trap, where like it used to just had the rules written on the card, and then later it was shorthanded to this has planeswalking,
yeah,
or this has swamp walker, whatever it is.
Man, it used to say tap to add fire to your mana pool. Now there's just a big icon that says fire.
Yep.
I feel like that is a detrimental change.
Yeah, kind of. But yeah, so that's what I got out of that. And next time I don't have work, I'll probably be working on that.
All right.
If I'm not upgrading my computer to play Planet.
Man, on the subject of bringing a game to Spielbini, like, remember in high school when I kind of wrote a lot of, like, an arena mech combat game?
Yep.
I should dust that off sometime and see what I actually like about it and see what I was kind of just slavishly aping from Armored Core.
Yeah.
And see what that's about.
Like, I remember me and RJ played, like, a little arena fight one time.
Yeah.
And it was actually pretty fun, like, and it's hard to make, like, a tabletop game like that fun with just two versus players.
Mm-hmm.
Also, just, like, some of the ideas you had about, like, a game with pilot mental stability in it.
Yeah.
That was kind of cool. I would also like to help you with that.
There was a flipping out state.
Yeah.
What flipping out did depended on the sort of archetype of your pilot.
Yeah. Which is cool. Okay. We had Talents by Jeff Warrender. A light auction game. Each round features several auctions, and in each, the price starts high and decreases.
Huh.
Wait until the price is right for the card you want, but waiting too long risks another player taking the card and consumes your limited supply of time tokens.
Huh.
That sounded cool. I believe that was one of the ones going while my game was up, so I did not get a chance to play that.
Auction games are fun, though.
Yeah.
I like, that Power Plant one.
Downhill Racer by Jeff Warrender. Quick, push your luckish dice game about the Olympic downhill. The course is composed of cards, each of which represents a course element, a turn, a jump, etc., and each of which tests a particular skill, turning, gliding, etc. Choose how aggressive you want to be on an element, and then roll to see if you succeed. Success increases your speed. Failure could result in a crash, and crashes are harder to avoid the faster you're going.
I feel like I've played that game.
You're thinking of Toboggans of Doom.
Okay.
Which I have upstairs, and that's kind of what it is, except it's adding this sort of speed element.
Okay.
Which, you know, making it like an actual race, and so you can go faster, but you're more likely to fail.
Okay.
That part sounded neat. Otherwise, it does sound a lot like Toboggans of Doom. And I don't want to rag on this guy. I don't think that actually came up at all during the thing. I know I certainly didn't get a chance to play it. Yeah, Toboggans of Doom could have done with some fixing.
Yeah.
At least some better written rules, so that way people aren't just infinitely using a baseball bat to beat down the Aurora Borealis. Although that is pretty narratively great.
Oh, boy.
The next game by Jeff Warrender is I Am Spartacus.
Okay. Oh, I see.
A game in which players stand up and declare, I Am Spartacus, a la Kirk Douglas and Tony Curtis.
Yeah.
That's the entire description of the game.
Did you play that game?
I did.
Could you tell me about this game? Like, do you just need to convince everyone else that you are, in fact, Spartacus? Like, what's the deal?
It was another sort of werewolf type.
Whose execution are you trying to prevent?
Spartacus.
Okay.
Well, okay. So it's broken into two teams. There are two Romans, one Spartacus, and a bunch of slaves. Everyone else is slaves.
That's three teams.
Well, Spartacus is kind of a slave.
Okay.
And basically the way that it was is that the Romans come in and say, which among you is Spartacus? And then every slave has a chance to stand up and say, I'm Spartacus. I'm Spartacus. And then the Romans have to decide who to execute and who to free. The Romans lose if they free Spartacus. The Romans
win if they kill him.
They win if they kill him. They win more if they kill him without executing a bunch of random slaves.
Okay. They win more.
Yeah. This was a real weird game.
Yeah.
Well, especially in the playing of it, because, like, he had basically come up with it on a drive over. Like, they stopped at a rest stop, and he just started saying it, and then by the time they got there, they had a game.
I don't really see a way for the slaves to win if the only options for the Roman is win or win less.
Yeah. No, that's the thing. The way we played the first round was just like half the group stood up, and I said, because I was one of the Romans, and I said, we should kill everybody who stood up. And we did, and Spartacus was among them, and we won. So that was the other thing.
Yeah, like, and then you just kind of dust your hands off and like, well, that could have gone better, but eh.
Well, because the other thing about it is the only time a person is revealed to have been Spartacus or a slave is if you free them. So you could kill Spartacus, but they don't have to tell you, and then the game keeps going.
Why?
Because then you might accidentally kill more.
So what? At some point, the Romans just have to say, eh, we probably got him.
Yeah. And that's what we did after killing half of the group the first turn. And we did get him, so we won. We won the most. Well, it's hard to say because, like, okay, so we played probably about 8 rounds of this game. Every time we played it with different rules. because the biggest problem of it was, like, when you're playing it, like, for the Romans, it is pretty much a blind guess every time.
Yeah.
Like, we tried so many ways, and we could not really find a way to, like, not have it be clear who Spartacus was. While also not making it matter who stood up. Because, and then for it...
Can you choose to execute people who didn't stand up?
That was one of the rules we played with. For a while, it was like...
Because what if nobody stands up?
Well, because for a while, it was like, you can execute everyone who stood. It was basically like you have to choose a group to execute, like, one or more of the people who stood, one or more of the people who did not stand, or free one person who did not stand.
Huh.
And we just didn't free anyone and killed everybody who stood up.
Yeah.
And it seemed to work. Yeah, like, it kind of just didn't work. Like, it kind of just, like, did not work. Like, everyone had a real fun-ass time standing up and saying, I am Spartacus.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And considering that was, like, the principal design point, it was a success in that matter.
Yeah, like, at the end of the day, I'd probably like to play this game.
Yeah.
Get a room full of people.
But, like, there was basically, like, no way over, like, 8 iterations and ideas that we could figure out how to make it.
How to make a win condition for the slaves?
No, there was win conditions, but we just couldn't make it, like, interesting to play. Because it was either a blind guess for... Because it basically ended up being, like... It was supposed to be sort of like a bluffing game.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Because, like, that scene in Spartacus.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you know, the slaves stand up in order to be decoys for Spartacus, and it's like, does Spartacus stand up or not? But, like, at the end of the day, for the Romans, it's kind of just a blind guess. Like, the only way you make it not blind is that you free slaves, and then in doing so, like, as long as you didn't free Spartacus...
Your odds got better.
Your odds got better that you could kill Spartacus.
In which case, you should probably just kill them all, yeah. Anyway.
But yeah, like, it kind of doesn't work as a game. Probably because it's hard to make a win condition, which is probably why it made sense in the movie to do. or something, like, in that situation. Like, we were like there was even a part where, like, what if we approach this kind of like the Prisoner's Dilemma? Can we make it kind of like that? No. Okay.
Well, I mean,
what
if you
we...
stand up and say, I'm Spartacus, it's more likely that, you know, you're going to get executed.
Kind of.
And everybody who gets executed loses.
Kind of. Except not really, because, like...
Because they still got to jump up and yell, I am Spartacus.
Yeah.
Which might be the win condition right there.
Well, no, also, because, like, if you stand up and that gets you killed, as long as you weren't Spartacus, you're helping your team.
But you're dead.
Yeah. It's a weird game that didn't really work.
Okay.
But everybody stood up and said, I am Spartacus, and it was pretty fun.
Yeah.
Safe House by Tom Keel. I do want to say that Tom was the person who hosted this meeting, and he did a fantastic job, and I am grateful for his hospitality.
Thank you, Tom.
Him and his wife made delicious food for us.
Fantastic. Thank you, Mrs. Tom.
And also, I did get to play a game with his kids.
Oh, yeah?
We will get to that one later. I believe it is at the bottom of the list, but that will be an experience to tell. Safe House. In this semi-cooperative game, the players take on the roles of a group of thieves looking to knock off bigger and bigger targets. Can you contribute to each progressive heist? Will the cops nail you or find the group's safe house? Will your buddies bail you or out or rat you out? Will you dare to swipe stuff from the safe house? Will your friends try to tap into your private stash? Are there too many options in this game for it to be any fun?
Is that, that's part of the official description? That's
yes.
Not editorializing?
That is the way the description ends.
Okay. Well, from your experience?
I didn't get to play it. I don't know if it was played.
I don't know. I like a heist.
Yeah, no, it sounds like it would have been pretty fun. It makes me think there was that Monaco game.
Mm.
I don't know if that ever came out.
I don't know.
But like, if it was sort of that same idea, but making it a, like a decision-based board game rather than like a dexterity-based action stealth game.
All I know about it is bits about Jean-Baptiste.
But yeah, like, as long as it's better than Payday to Heist, like, and that shouldn't be too hard.
That was also a video game?
That was the, like, yeah, that was a video game.
Okay.
I have a copy of it. It's not very good.
You got a copy of Blood in the Sand?
I do. But that game was a video-ass video game. That game, like, deserves some conceptual respect.
Okay.
I'm not saying give it to it, but, like, consider...
But it deserves some...
It deserves a consideration that it probably should get respect.
If you have a moment, just think about it.
Like, it should get respect, but it probably doesn't deserve it. How about that?
Weird.
I don't know.
Moving on.
Triple Delight by Tom Keel. This is the game I played when we first got there.
You told me about this game, and it sounds adorable.
You play as desserts? Every dessert has a face, and they're all super happy, except for the broken egg who's super unhappy. There's also an octopus who eats everything. I could really empathize with this game.
Yeah.
And that octopus. In this flipping dexterity game, you will flick your tokens on the table to surround and capture opponent's pieces while you try to defend your own desserts. Keep an eye out for dessert-eating creeps, don't get raw egg on your desserts, and, if you can, claim the trophy to protect your desserts for a time. This game was real fun. It was
you described the mechanics of this game to me.
And that's the thing, like, I don't want to go too deep on these because it is kind of a game that once you know the rules, you can just play it with pieces.
I thought this one had been published already.
Okay, so that's on, what is it, gamecrafter.net?
Mm-hmm.
It might be .org. It's on Gamecrafters, if you Google that. And so basically what they do, they're not necessarily like publishers. They are like manufacturers.
Oh, okay.
So what you do is like you as a game creator can sign up and be like, here is my, you know, here's all my PDFs. Here's the one of what the box should look like. Here's the one of what to put on the stickers. You can pick like what kind of pieces, what kind of things. You can be like, I want a deck of cards. Here's a PDF of what each card should look like. And then they will basically like print that out and send you a thing. And
they will they like print it to order?
I believe so.
Okay.
And so, like, that's the kind of thing about it. Like he had, like, a nice printed box that he did, which he said was the deluxe set.
Ooh.
And, like, you saw it online. Like, it was like, $16 for that game.
Yeah, yeah.
Keep in mind that $16 is basically getting you a box with, like a 4x8 sheet with the rules printed on it and, like, 10 tokens. That's everything in that box.
Can I...
You kind of wanted to, don't you?
I want... I want to play this game.
Yeah.
Look, I'm gonna say it. You flick tokens around the board, and you try to ascribe a triangle that encompasses everyone else's tokens.
Yeah, pretty much. But, like, it's real fun, because, like, it's weird because it's dexterity-based, and, like,
yeah.
He said he invented this game, like, by flicking, like, sugar packets around at the diner with his kids while they were waiting for their food, and, like, that's pretty clear, but, like,
oh, dude,
there's, like, just enough rules to make sure that everybody's playing by the same rules that, like, you get a full game out of it, and it is pretty fun. Like, it was also weird because, like, people were just whiffing and being bad at it, but, like, there's also a thing about, like, when a special chip falls off the table, whoever grabs it first is the one. So, like, you kind of get the sense that this is for, like, kids and people who would be running around and stuff.
Yeah.
But, I guess still pretty fun. It's still pretty fun trying to do it.
Yeah.
And I'd, trying to get it, like.
I really like
and it's,
to play
it's
that game.
Really light. We played it. We should grab the poker chips out of my car and clean this table off and try it a little bit. I don't know how it would work with two people. We played it with, like, 8 people.
Okay.
And it's really fun. Like, it's actually, it's the kind of thing where, like, as soon as we're old enough that we all have arthritis, we will be unable to play it.
Aww.
And it'll just make us sad that our youth is lost. Because it is entirely dexterity based. It is not really a decision game, but there is a bit of decision. There's a bit of tactics and just, like, you know, do I go for this? Do I go for that? Do I want to risk that I can be accurate? Like, in a sense, you are betting on your own skill.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, because there are, like, safe bets and there are hard bets, and it was kind of great when people just whiffed and when people just started being, like, vindictive, like, I'm going to take this easy shot that doesn't do anything good for me, but it knocks you off the table.
Yeah.
So
that sounds dope.
Like, we were, like 8 grown-ass adults playing this game, and it was real fun. Like, everybody had a real good time.
Triple Delight. Look it up.
Like I said, it's on Game Crafters if you want to go. I'm pretty sure he gets at least some cut of that, and is not it might, that price might go purely to, like, the on-demand printing cost, because you're not, you know, printing out, like, 500 copies at a time.
Yeah.
If you were printing out 500 copies at a time, this might be, like, a $6 game, which would be cool, and I think we gave him, like, enough changes to the rule that may actually happen soon enough.
Cool.
Because, like, it's simple, it's easy, but, like, you put that in a box, I am tempted to buy it. I'm tempted to buy a box of tokens.
Especially if, like, they're nice, like, heavy.
They're nice. They got the stickers on them. The fact that they come with, like, okay, I'm going to throw this out there. The blue ones were donuts with smiley faces on them.
Okay.
The purple ones were macaroons with smiley faces
on
them.
Ooh, nice.
The yellow ones were lemon squares with smiley faces on them.
Oh, dude.
And, like, they were all super adorable. I would kind of, you know, pay a cost in order to get tokens specifically with cute art stickers on them.
Yeah. Hold on.
Okay.
You in the question. Back.
Yes, you.
Let's say somebody has some pogs.
Okay. I was really considering playing with the Puzzle Strike chips. Because you get 3 character chips and there's 10 of them. And that is basically exactly what's in that box.
Oh, shit.
And there's also special gems between the gems and the crash gems and the wounds. All right, there. That's... Okay.
Anyway,
yeah.
we're spending a lot of time on here. I don't know how many we got left, but this recording has been going on.
Yeah, okay. Let's see here. Cyber Warrior 3 by Michael Walters.
Dude!
In the future.
I'm sorry for that wave.
That's okay. It was worth it.
Hold on. I'll say dude more quietly. Dude.
Nah,
you can edit
go,
that in if you want.
You need to go a little higher than that.
Dude!
All right, that's good. In the
that
future.
That one didn't sound genuine. I'm sorry.
No, it's not a good enough. In the future, cyber warriors compete on a virtual battlefield as the flashiest virtual reality TV series. In this card and dice game, you build your attacks and defense while trying to eliminate your opponents. The twist here is that the opponents you attack and the ones you are defending from are not the same person. The only way you get to attack the person who is attacking you is by making it through all the opponents in between.
Oh, okay. So it's kind of like the round robin of, like, a lot of people game of Puzzle Strike?
Kind of. I don't know. We didn't get to play it.
Okay.
I didn't get to play it. I don't think it was played at all, honestly.
Dang.
But I kind of like the sound of that setup. Again, it reminds me a little of Bang. I want to say it seems a little like Sissy Fight. Did you ever play Sissy Fight?
No.
That game was kind of gross. When I was in school, one day the class was just, we're going to redesign this game, and I made Sissy Mecha Fight 2000, which
okay.
Might have changed a little bit. If we can get, like, 4 people, we can try it, because that... It's a game worth experiencing, because like it just gives you ideas, even though it's not that great.
Why is it called Sissy Fight?
Because it's kind of about like indirect attacking and sort of just being like, I think the story behind it is like talking behind people's backs on a playground or something.
Okay.
Yeah. Moving on. That Crafting Game by Michael Walters. In this game, you are up for the job of Master Artificer for the Fae Queen. You have till summer solstice to create magical wonders for you to present to the Queen. The one with the most exciting collection wins. This game is a card game where each group starts off with recipes to make level 1 objects, that through trade and more resources create level 2 objects, that can once more be remixed to create level 3 objects. Turns are somewhat simultaneous, with what order you do things decided by each player separately. There's a marketplace that is currently under heavy tweaking. This is hopefully going to be ready for a dry run, though, by the 6th, which was when this was.
Dude.
I didn't get to play that. I think it was played. It
sounds cool.
It sounds all right. Like, you want to tell me that there's, like, a sort of a way to take, like, just the trading part, like, the trading and crafting part of Catan and expand on that? That sounds like it could work.
It kind of sounds more to me, I forget what it was called, but there was this game I played back in Oswego.
Are you thinking of the items from League of Legends?
No.
Okay.
Like, you played as, like, some kind of goblin tinkerer, mm-hmm. and you were trying to piece together, like, some kind of giant machine out of different cards that, like, connected in different ways.
Oh, that sounds pretty cool, too.
Yeah. I really liked that game. If this game is like that, I would like it.
Yeah.
Not to get too reduction-y.
Yeah.
But, no, that sounds pretty dope.
Yeah, no, it sounds interesting. Okay.
But it also kind of sounds like item building in a MOBA.
Yeah. Which, again, like, if you actually put, like, resources in it and have to do some sort of, like, not navigation. Negotiation. If you have to do some, like, negotiation
yeah,
to get those
especially
resources.
I like the suggestion of bartering. I like the suggestion of, like, there's a... I like in games when there's, like, a step of actions that everyone takes and then you move on to the next one.
Mm-hmm.
Was Puerto... what was that game?
I'm thinking Supremacy was kind of like that. Supremacy was like Axis and Allies, but with nukes and L-Star satellites.
Mm. No, I was trying to... It's a card game where you're like... it was kind of like Dominion, but with less deck building. I forget. Let's move on.
Yeah, okay. I am going to jump a little bit, because while we're talking about negotiating, I want to jump right into talking about Six Old Men Who Rule the World.
Okay, let's talk about that.
By
the Pope.
By Rich Durham. He's the other one.
The President of the United States, a.k.a. the POTUS.
The most boring description.
Santa Claus.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Who was that dude? He wasn't the Duke. Not John Williams. Not John Wayne. I think he was K in Men in Black, but not. He was in Gran Torino, that one.
Dwayne I know Johnson. Who you're talking about, but I can't remember his name, and I'm thinking of Clive Owen.
That's not it.
fuck.
Okay, the most boring description, which is how the description starts. People wrote their own descriptions, and so you kind of get a glance
Clint
at what
Eastwood.
The group is like. Clint Eastwood, yes.
God damn it.
A heavy negotiation game about the mitigation of stressors on various regions of the world. Players represent a behind-the-scenes faction that influences the globe towards their own goals, but only indirectly and only with the cooperation of the other players.
Interesting.
So I didn't get to play this one myself, but I did come in while people were talking heavily about it. Mm. I think I heard comparisons to, like, Pandemic, where, you know, players are working and there's, like, just mechanical, almost AI-like qualities about how the game progresses and what it does. They were talking about, like, different cultures and how in a previous version of the game, like, there is basically, like, a culture level and a violence level for a region. And in an old version of the game, culture could go away completely, and you would only have violence, and that was a state known as being a culture of violence.
Okay.
But they were also talking about how the game...
We have reached Mad Max times.
Like, the game was a neat idea because it was heavily about, like, negotiation and sort of, like, working together, and it was supposed to be about, like, bargaining and, like, you know, how much can you gain for how little can you give, and, like... But apparently there was something about, like, you, like, kind of like you did not get enough agency. Like, there was not enough things to negotiate over that you felt like you could accomplish anything.
Just sort of conceptually, I like the idea of that game, though, of just, like, everyone squabbling over, like, you know, look, you know, theoretically we're working together, but I want this one specific thing that you guys don't. And because nobody is agreeing over those one specific things, like, just swaths of the world are becoming Mad Max.
Yeah. No, I think one player in a game has a goal of starting a nuclear war.
Okay.
I think. So it sounded like an interesting game, but also from the sound of it, like, it needed more work. But, like, that sounded like, if you like diplomacy without any of the, like, tactics, military movement type stuff. Mm. It seemed like that kind of game. And again, like, I'm pretty sure I heard comparisons to Pandemic about, like, we're going to decide stuff and put limited things into action, but then the world is going to change on its own, and that's what we're going to contend with. Mm. Moving on. Okay, so the next game I want to talk about, the next game on the list, is Warlord, The Introductory Scenario, A Tale of Two Countries, by Joe Joyce. This is a two-player game that takes 2 to 3 hours.
Okay.
This is the one that I was telling you about, and I showed you a picture of, and it's actually going to be the preview for this podcast.
This sounds like a fascinating game, you guys.
Okay, so Joe Joyce.
JoJo.
Yeah, JoJo. Oh, yeah. Okay, so JoJo is like, I want to say this guy was like nearly 70 years old. He said he's been working on this game for the past 8 years. He is one of the, like, main editors of chessvariants.com.
Oh.
And he said that his first version of this game was he took 4 chessboards, put them together to make a giant chessboard.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where he started.
Yeah.
I'm going to now read you the description. This is also the longest description. Warlord is a set of rules for an abstract strategy war game. The intro scenario has been playtested a few times, but the game itself has been fairly thoroughly developed. But I'm looking for high-quality scenarios that are also very replayable and not too long for an afternoon or evening. There are 5 piece types, each with a different short-range move, diagrammed in the lower left corner of the piece.
Yeah.
1 type is a leader. Any piece to move must be activated by a leader that is within 2 squares of the piece at the start of that piece's move. Leaders have different values, and player only get a limited total number of activations per turn, 8 for this scenario. Capture is automatic. A player merely moves a piece legally onto a square containing an enemy piece. The enemy piece is captured, and the friendly piece remains in the square, ceasing movement. Each player has 4 cities to start, each with its own small army. Victory goes to the player who has a friendly unit in an enemy city at the beginning of a friendly turn, or essentially destroys the opponent's army. Players get periodic reinforcements and occasional replacements. Playtest games have lasted from 15 to 35 turns. And then he could send rules if you were interested. So, like, basically what this guy is trying to do with this game is he is trying to straddle the line between, like, a large wargaming a la a Warhammer or Brick Wars, something like that. Something where, like, tabletop and movement and, like, different fronts and just, like, smaller, like, a big game where small battles are happening all across the board.
In this guy's case, I'm imagining, like, Napoleonic figurines of a very specific scale.
He's going with Civil War era.
Okay.
He was telling me that, like, his ideal situation is he wants to be able to recreate the Battle of Gettysburg and the Battle of the Bulge.
Okay.
But, like, all of his pieces have, like, little dues on it, and he has cannons and cavalry and, you know, terrain and mountains and it's very simple like that. Or not simple, but that's the era he's going for in his mind. Mm. Although it's, like, it is abstracted in the sense that you could put whatever you want to.
Yeah.
While we were playing, I actually got the idea for, like, a soccer game. but so the idea is, like he's trying to get, like, a large-scale war game, but trying to streamline it in the sense that this game is completely deterministic. There are no dice rolls. There is nothing like that. Everything that happens, you know exactly why it happens. I was thinking it is very friendly if you wanted to make a computer game out of it.
Mm.
And so basically the thing is, like, the 5 different pieces are basically like your 5 pieces in chess. A rook, a bishop, a knight, a king, which is also kind of a queen, and a pawn.
Okay.
And, like, so when you're playing it, it does feel very much like a chess game. Because it is, like, unlike any, like, any time you play a turn. And he was saying he was trying to get out of analysis paralysis.
Mm.
mm-hmm. which is what happens in chess when you get just good enough, about how you say, like, well, yeah, yeah. I could do this, but if I do this, he's going to do this. But, you know, I could do this, but then he's going to do this. And, like, the thing where you get, like, five turns ahead when you're thinking about a turn.
Yeah.
He says he's trying to get away from that.
Beyond that, the thing where, like, two chess masters look at a board in whatever state, and they're just like, oh, yeah, we know how this plays out.
Yeah. That's kind of how our game
this
ended.
This side wins 12 turns from now.
Yeah, no, that's kind of what happened. Like, we got to a point, like, we ended the game probably, like, five turns before the game would have ended on its own.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, for a while we thought we knew what was going to happen, but it was still unclear, so we kept playing, and then just, like, no, there's no way for me to get out of this. You're going to win in three turns because you're going to do this, I'm going to do this, you're going to do this. We both agreed, and we shook hands.
Okay.
Which was actually kind of nice. But on a large scale, it is a war game, and, you know, there are many fronts, there's things going on, there's cities to capture, there's terrain. But on a small scale, just, like, with peace movement, you get that same kind of thing. You're about, like, you know, how can I, you know, short range defending this pieces, who can move this way? You know, it's about sort of, like, drawing lines using rooks and bishops or the cavalry and the cannons, just, like, you know, how can I line this up? But the hook of, like, only leaders can activate, mm-hmm. that actually made it really, really interesting. Because what ends up happening is that you don't have to move every piece every turn. You only consider the pieces around leaders, but then you also consider moving the leaders to change the state of the board.
Yeah, yeah.
What ends up happening is that, like, just you focus on the leaders, and then whatever happens around them is sort of part of the game. So, in a chess, like, you see everything on the board, everything is, like, an interesting piece, and it's just a matter of how useful they are. But then what's happened here is that depending on where you put your leader, it changes what now is a part of the scenario.
Yeah, yeah. What's actually, like, going to be able to take action.
Yeah. It's about drawing a line. It's about... It basically is just, like, you know, on the small scale, it feels like playing a chess game.
You want to, like, always move your units in such a way that you have them covered in case they'd be yeah. attacked or whatever.
Because it is deterministic, so you can read ahead and you can say, you know, if I put this here, he can do this. If I put that here, he can do that. And sometimes it's about things that you miss, pieces you don't notice are there. There was one time where we both got surprised. I was able to take one of his leaders with a cannon who I didn't realize I was moving my leader into range of that cannon to activate it.
Hmm.
Like, because the turn before, it hadn't been there, and we had this fight going on. I moved him over. Neither one of us noticed, and then I was like, oh, I have your leader now. And, like, he got really hurt by that because leaders are extremely powerful.
Yeah.
It's kind of like having four kings, but that, like, taking them away negates pieces. There was also times where, like, I think I had two infantry who sat on the edge of board the entire game.
Because never moved?
Never moved because nobody was ever there to activate them.
Yeah.
There's weird things about, like, he would send pieces into my territory not to activate them. And I was like, okay, but... Or, like, he would send them into my territory and, like, not capture anything and leave them there. And it's like, okay, now do I backtrack to take them out? Because if he can't get in, he can't, you know, he can't activate it. It's worthless
yeah,
to him.
Yeah, but that's potentially a time bomb if he, like, moves
yeah,
the leader
no.
up.
If I goof and he does get a leader in, I'm boned.
Yeah.
So, like, there is, it's weird. Like, it made me realize how, like, war games is so much about placement and movement and playing tic-tac-toe and AI computers. Because if you say war games and a singular, you're talking about the movie.
Sure.
It kind of made me want to play Brick Wars again.
In my mind, like, I just see myself building, like, a column of leaders so I can just, like, channel all of my units through them and just move them up ladder.
I mean, that's kind of what happened. Because, like the way his introductory scenario set out is basically, like, there's, like, four, like, pretty much equally spaced cities and a leader in each city. So, like, it could have been just, like, playing, like, four tiny chess games.
Mm-hmm.
Except for the fact that you pick how your troops are laid out at the beginning. Like,
yeah,
one city was surrounded by infantry, and that was the stupidest thing I could have done. But at the same time, then I was just like, I'm going to bring him and whatever infantry should come with him over to this other one and just have double the amount of activity over here. And that actually let me punch through, which kept me from losing at about turn six.
That kept me from learning the game.
But it was really cool. Like we were both sitting there. This dude's been playing it for like 8 years, and me, a guy who had literally never seen it before. And we had like a good long game. It lasted like about 20 turns. So like... And he won in the end, but for a while we weren't sure who was going to win. Neither one of us.
Mm.
So, like, that's a really, really good game.
Yeah, that seems really strong.
Yeah. And I told him, like, this is a game that I would love to have and take home. And he said if it wasn't for the fact that, like, he had to make every set by hand and he just, like, has too much arthritis and tendonitis to really do that anymore, he would have, like, sold me that set right there.
Jeez.
And, like, I feel kind of bad, but it's, like, I can remember enough of it that, like, we could make our own set.
Mm-hmm.
And I do. So the part about it that made me think of soccer was the idea of just, like, if you think about it in some sense, like, your leader walks over to, like, kick something away.
Yeah.
And, like, you could just send it off, like a cannon. Like I feel kind of bad about it, but, like, I remember enough about this game that I feel like we could sort of make our own version. And he's trying to do something very specific. He's trying to, like, recreate certain things. He is working on making, you know, he wants to work on big-scale battles.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of like the idea of, like, taking this and making, like, sort of a small scale about it. Like, I could see making, like, you know, basically making big chess.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, sort of having that, putting it in a box. In some sense, it makes me want to, like, same kind of thing. Like, the way we used to be, like, let's just print out a big hex grid and play, like, Brick Wars on that, because then we don't need rulers and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Just playing something on a board so you don't need rulers, like, that really takes a lot out of things. The fact that there is no ranged attack, like, it's all units taking units, means you also don't have to worry about line of sight and, like, obscuring line of sight, and that takes an interesting amount out of it. But, like, playing it, it scratched the same itch that something like Fire Emblem takes out of me. Mm-hmm. And, like, even though, like, it didn't have, like, unit skills or probability or support, things like that, like, it has just enough about that. It's kind of a game about drawing lines.
Mm.
Which, actually, is an interesting thing. You get more analysis paralysis because it's deterministic.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, and you know that if you lose, it's because you didn't think about it enough.
Yeah.
And that's sort of interesting that, but it's interesting that, so, like, he's been worried about it. He told me his solution was he has an egg timer and just, like, 3-minute turns no matter what. And I was trying to convince him that that wasn't really solving the problem, but it's what he'd done, and, like, it does kind of work. And I was thinking it would work sort of as a sort of play by mail thing where, you know, you take as long as you want and then, you know, play it over the course of a few days or something.
Mm-hmm.
No,
I kind of honestly, I'm not so opposed to the timer idea, because then it's just like, you know, how good are you at analyzing this situation and acting accordingly quickly?
Well, because, like, the way that I realized I was playing it, like, if there had been a timer, it would have been about, you know, how good am I at analyzing, you know, which of these sub games am I in the better position on? Because then I will focus more on those and just assume the other two are losses.
Oh, jeez.
Like that's the thing. Like, and that's kind of what happened anyway, because by the end of it, because there was, like, total activations and you couldn't do everyone in a single turn, like, basically what ended up happening, like, right in the middle of the board where most of our, like, because I moved two dudes together to make a big fight in the middle, he had to pull his dudes into the middle, and we ended up just playing, like, one big game in the middle, but there were still dudes on the outside who just weren't doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
So it does sort of become this thing, like, which isn't kind of good for, like, wargaming, but only in the sense that, like, it just slows everything down. I don't know if that was really a big deal. Like, I would kind of be curious about doing that, like, with Brick Wars, to just say, like, you know, if you have, like, a commander in, like, a brigade or something, mm-hmm. then the entire brigade can move, and that's, like, one activation, but, like, you know, you can only move, like, 3 of your vehicles a turn, and then it almost just sort of, like, draws it out, and you have to choose when, you know, when this piece is time to scuttle this and bring a new buddy into the battle. Mm. And, like, you know, like, selective reinforcement. You just choose when to bring in your reinforcement from the back lines.
Okay.
Like, that could be interesting, but again, like, I would almost rather, you know, just print out, like, a big grid first, because then you don't have to measure anything. Measuring anything takes a lot of time in war games.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's always kind of been my least favorite part about it.
Yeah.
Although finding really clever lines of sights is cool. Maybe. It was one of the fun parts about Triple Delight. About just, like, when something's on the edge and then everybody leans over to try to get a straight line look to see if the centers line up.
Sure.
I was almost thinking, like, if you took those chips and you just put, like, a lead in the center, so that way you knew exactly where the center was, and you just line up the big bright lights. Almost like a bullet hell kind of thing. You just, like, you have this whole chip, but all you care about is the point of the center.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, that game was...
This is your chips hitbox.
That game was really good. Joe Joyce, chessvariants.com. He has like a lot of his previous iterations, which were still very chess-like. Apparently, chessvariants.com has some sort of editor where like you can reprogram the rules of chess and change sizes and board things and like introduce new pieces. I really want to play around with that, see what's capable of that. But like he has a bunch of his previous variants up on that site that you can go and play if you just look up Warlord game. Problem is, every time we mentioned the name of it, I was like, oh, dude, I do like Warlords too, but that's different. Although he did have, like...
Oh, I do like Warlords.
He did have one layout, which was, like, a four-player variant where everybody started in a corner.
Did he know what was up?
I don't think so. He was old, and he was one of the ones to play Arcade Rumble with me, and he was just like, well, all the titles are meaningless, so the part, you know, the other half of why I made that game was really lost on him. But yeah, so, I mean, the dude is on his game.
Yeah.
Literally. What else we got? I got to run through it. We got Grammar Slammer by Deem Howard, a simple card game to help children learn to put sentences together. I don't think that got played. Totally Not Zomboree by Rich Durham, a hot potato group puzzle solving game involving zombies, because, you know, zombies. Meant to be played in small groups or large ones the same way. I don't think that got played.
I kind of like that description. Just like, it's meant to be played by groups of people.
Yep.
Whatever kind of group that is, you got.
It's listed as 4 to 20 players. And at less than 30 minutes, so that's crazy. Mainframe Omega, a.k.a. Broker, by Andy Van Zandt. A trading game without negotiation. Sort of.
Did that get played?
I don't know if that dude was even there. He also did In Ruins, a post-apocalyptic drafting game. We had Futures Market by P.D. Magnus.
Whoa.
Yeah. Players bid for commodities on the basis of limited knowledge about what they might be worth. In his previous incarnation, as speculation, this used to be the deck tet for both the valuation cards and the commodities. If I have time to put together, this will be with new cards. I'm not entirely sure what a deck tet is. Apparently, it is like a common type of game, I think.
Okay.
But it did sound it did remind me of Puerto Rico when I read that description.
Puerto Rico is the game I was trying to remember, yeah.
Yep. I thought you said Puerto Rico.
I said Puerto something.
Oh, okay.
I wasn't sure if it was actually called Puerto Rico or if it was some like fictionalized Puerto Rico. It's actually Puerto Rico.
I think it was just Puerto Rico.
Okay. Is P.D. Magnus like a robot hunter? Do you know if that guy hunts robots?
No, but he did remind me of one of my old roommates, like to a startling amount.
Weird.
Yeah. One of the ones who was a
robot hunter.
Yeah, he was the one who knew what Wartek Senko no Rande was.
Oh, dude.
Okay, final game, Time Library.
Time Library
by Kristen Magnus. Follow me here.
Okay,
the world is doomed. You are probably all going to die. Fortunately, the portal to the temporal library has opened. You are part of the crack team that will be sent through the portal to find the records room, figure out what humanity will have done to avert disaster, and then take the return portal to implement the plan. Okay?
Okay.
Time Library is a semi-cooperative, music-making, maze exploration game.
Hold on.
Players start out on the same team, but it's possible only some of them will make it out of the library. Players should feel free to bring instruments or objects they've got lying around that make cool sounds.
Hold on.
I will bring a box of found objects for players who don't have their own.
Did you play this game?
I played this game. I made sure this game was played.
Tell me about this game.
So I didn't learn this until, like, yesterday when I was going over people's websites, looking them up after learning who they were, because that's how I do it, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Kristen Magnus has a PhD in music.
Okay.
And so it was kind of backward. Like, this is a music-making game.
Yeah, yeah.
It was kind of crazy. So basically what happens is...
Sounds pretty dope.
In a lot of ways, it is kind of dope. The final feedback I had for her was like, it's dope in three different ways that seem totally unconnected to each other right now. Okay, so it's... maze tile based. There's a deck of rooms. Every time you hit like a path to another room, you draw a new card.
Deal out another. Okay.
the way you progress between
random
different
dungeon, you got me.
Yeah, the way you progress to different rooms is there are lines between like intersections across cards.
Okay,
and they have sequences of dots on them. Dots come in three different sizes. In order to progress, you have to play the sequence of dots as though like you were kind of reading sheet music in order to create tunes.
Easy enough.
Everybody plays simultaneously, so music just sort of happens as players are doing their thing.
Oh, weird.
There are different classes that have like different abilities. The way you use abilities is they each have a unique musical thing that you do. So some of them is like you build up to a crescendo. Some of them is you make a droning noise. Some of them is stuff like that.
Huh.
Every time you reach an intersection, before choosing a new path to go down, you take a book, which is just a card from a deck, and it'll have something written on it that you need to do. Some of them are like, pick a sequence of three notes and play seven phrases of it.
Okay.
Some of them are like, you know, play an up and then play it down. Some of them it's like, come up with five different pitches on your instrument. Some of them will ask you to say things. The best ones were say something arbitrary.
Okay.
Come up with a set of directions for using an everyday object as if you were reading them off of a side of a box. Say the names of five different animals as though you were saying a question. And, say the advice that you got?
No.
Say advice that you received long ago.
Huh.
Later when she explained it, she said that, like, what she's going for is sort of like the parts in experimental music where you just hear words in the middle of it, which is why some of them were just like, arbitrary. One of the cards was arbitrary. Say three completely arbitrary things.
So, like, people are just making noise as they're moving around on the board. And this is all happening simultaneously?
Simultaneously.
And then every once in a while, someone is like, goat, alpaca, tortoise, rabbit, lemur?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, so I have to say, when this game came out, some of Tom's kids were in the room.
Okay.
And they had heard about this game before. And they all wanted to play. I was the only one over, I'm going to say the age of like 10 or 12 who was playing.
Oh, Jesus.
And we had a full game of six players.
Like the Magnus's senior did not join in. It was just the kids.
Yeah.
And you.
And me.
Okay.
It got interesting. Because, first of all, because like some of them like were not paying attention to like the sequence of notes. They were just like, this is part where I make noise. But we had a piano. We had one girl who actually knew how to play the cello when she was doing that. I'm pretty sure that was the oldest one. We had one little kid who was just like excited to have a kazoo.
Oh, man.
Okay. And so here's the thing.
What were you using to make noise?
I had a brass pot. And a big ceramic pot and two chopsticks.
Okay.
So I was playing some percussion.
Okay.
It was working out. It was actually doing all right.
Now, do you kind of just decide for yourself, like, what the different symbols, like, what sound that corresponds to?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
You gotta fudge it because, like, you don't necessarily have different pitches
on
percussion. So just, like, it worked with it. Like, I had a table and I had two different pots. That's three. I have to mention, there was one kid, he got the directions card. They knew enough that when it said to, like, say something, they would say words.
Yeah, yeah.
He got the directions card, and he was like, pick up the box. Put down the box. No, wait, pick it up again. Step 4, drop the box. It won't break. Step 5, haha, that was a trick. It will totally break. And that was his directions.
It sounds like a lovely game.
One girl got the advice card. And it's also better because, like, people are, like, picking up the cards, reading it, doing the thing, and then putting it down to let everybody see what card they got.
Uh-huh.
One girl got the advice card, and the advice that she had learned was, use the toilet! So
that is advice that you got at a young age.
Yeah, she said she got that when she was 3.
Oh, good.
Okay, but the other thing about it is, like, you know, as you're going around, it also, like, so basically there's, like, 3 kinds of cards. There's cards where you say stuff, there's cards where you need to make a musical bit before you progress, and then there's cards that mess with the layout of the dungeon.
Oh, yeah.
So, it's a lot of rotating and swapping with the room you were just in. And so sometimes that got interesting, because you would, like, be trying to progress and then just get moved around, and you're like, well, now I gotta go this way. There were also sort of, like, generic abilities to rotate rooms and, like, call people together. When you find the records room, you have to work with another... Like, there was a lot about working with another player in order to, like, activate a power. So, like, to search, you need at least 2 people.
Okay.
And so we actually... We got to it, me and this one little kid, and we were doing it, and we got it, and we got out of there. And so part of it is that the high-tier play of this game, you're not allowed to speak during it, except for... when you speak from the cards.
Oh, man.
So you're, like, making eye contact, and all that's happening is music.
Oh, man.
And she said that in games she's played with adults, this actually has been people in another room say it sounded like music was just happening. Like, it was just a sequence of tones and things, and, like, it actually sounded like music, and, like, you might not have guessed that a game was being played.
Yeah.
In the situation we were in, it sounded like a bunch of kids were making noise.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, like, this sounds like it has the potential, like, even more potential to just be chaos.
Yeah. But like, so, like, I was sort of getting the dig of it, like, you know, all right, now I'm going to make this noise in order to go through the room. Now I'm going to make this noise. Like, it didn't seem like music, but I definitely got a sense of, like, I'm doing stuff by playing music, and that's cool.
You were just like, I decided to play this rhythm to go into this room.
Yeah.
This room means I need to play this rhythm.
Like... moving between rooms, I was thinking so hard about amplitude.
Yeah?
Yeah. About, you know, 3 notes making music travel. And, like, I'm so down with that. Like, that was actually kind of a really dope part about it.
Can I purchase a box of this game somewhere? Because it sounds like a fucking riot.
No. Okay, so, what was it? We got to the end. Okay, so the other thing about it is that there's a time limit about it, which is why only some people make it out. The deck of books and, like, the things to do doesn't get reshuffled. So basically, like, every time you move, you're getting 1 turn closer to the end of the game.
Okay.
And so, like, as rooms are, like, switching back and forth and you have to do certain things, like, you're trying to beat this time limit. I don't know if there's things about how that changes over time. Also, like, as you're searching, basically, as you're doing other things, you are, you know, you're running out of time.
Mm-hmm.
And we all made it out, except for the youngest one who had to go to bed in the middle of the game. He was lost in the time library.
Was he the one on Kazoo?
No, he had, like, 2 train whistles.
Oh, cool.
2
train whistles?
He was excited. He was very excited.
I'm picturing slide whistles, not train whistles.
Yeah. Oh, man, if he was just, like, akimboing, that would have been... Mouth theremin, we call it.
Yeah.
Oh, you could invent that instrument. I was almost tempted to play, like, I have a beat, like a drum machine sequencer thing on my iPad. I was tempted to play with that. and that's the thing. Like, so she said her next step is she's going to give it to, like, actual musicians to see what they come out with it. And I said, you're probably onto something if they come back and say, is it all right if I play this game and release it as my next album? Which is cute. Ultimately, I said to her, like, this is cool for 3 different reasons. Like, the traveling through the maze design is pretty cool, and, like, you have elements of a game in here because, like you have the abilities, you have the classes, you have, like, what is it? One person could make a tunnel between rooms, so you didn't have to worry about rotating it. One person could teleport to another player, another person could teleport a player to them. It was sort of like the systematic creation of rules that you get, but, like, the fact that it was split up and it did require cooperation and there were, again, like, more unique sounds that signify when something is happening.
Yeah, yeah.
That, you know, if you're not playing, like, and that's the thing, like, she said that when people played it, like you're making music, like, if you're actually, like, actually making music and not just banging on the keyboard, like you're doing a specific thing and you're making music and it doesn't feel like you're making music because you're playing the game and you're trying to accomplish things, but to other people, it sounds like music is being made. And that's actually really interesting about it. with the card element, like, I was almost getting a sort of, like a party game element out of that, where it's about, like, you know, we're all kind of doing things at the same time. I'm going to take my card. I'm going to say something crazy. We're all going to laugh about it. And then we're going to go on to the next thing. And we're going to go around doing that. Like, which, like, knowing her intent of just, like, random words in a song, okay. But, like, there is the way we were playing about just, like, draw a card and do it. And then everybody just sort of caught off guard by it. made it fun. Like, I could see that being, like, a cool party game in that sense.
Just the fact that you have, like, all just, you know, a handful of people around a table all, like, you know, making noise together to do something is a fucking party game right there.
Yeah. But just, like, because it has that aspect of, like, so there's, like, this, like, class-based cooperative aspect type game.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's also this, like, party game, we're going to do random things and take turns just sort of making fools of ourselves aspect to it. And then, like, so it's, like, there's, like, two ways that you could push this game. Mm. And, like, also just, like, the, like, it's not a deep dungeon crawler. Like, it is maze navigation, but it is not necessarily
dungeon
crawling.
There's not, like, combat or anything.
There's no more challenge than finding the room, getting everybody to the room, and then leaving.
Yeah, yeah.
So it seems a little light in that sense, so you could add more to it, but, like,
maybe how much more can you do at the same time as you are playing a cello?
Yeah. But that's the thing, like, you're also, you know, playing with sticks, playing harmonica. Like, it's depending on what you have, depending on how you want to do it. You know, if I was playing with my iPad, I could do a bunch of things. And an iPad is, like, a legit drum machine for making sounds.
I'm sure someone could come, like, could show up with six rocks and be playing legitimately.
In a sense, yeah. But then, you know, this was just a, I felt like there were, like, at least two ways you could push it to make it more game-like and, like, to push it towards a game for a specific group for a specific type of experience. Mm-hmm. But it was, like, right between, and I'm like, I'm not sure what this is for. It was, like, after we played it that I learned that it's, like, you know, she's a music PhD person.
Yeah.
And I've looked at her website. She has other music-making games, mm-hmm. in a sense. Like, I have to look more at them, but it looked like one of them was she recreated combat from the Atari 2600.
Yeah.
But you control it using kind of like Nihilee.
Okay.
You control it using pitches and noises and stuff. But it's two people sort of doing a duet because they're making a thing. And
okay. Are they fighting each other?
Yeah. They are playing combat and shooting each other in biplanes and stuff. Which, there's two of us here. Maybe we should try that.
Combat? I'm thinking of Berserker. Never mind.
Okay.
That's the one with all the robots.
Probably. Robotron?
No, Berserk.
Okay. I never played that one.
Me neither.
Okay.
I just know it's a thing that exists.
Okay. I got combat in the thing. Combat's a fucking awesome game. You play that with the
twisty one.
The driving paddles, because those are the ones without the stoppers on the edge of the rotation.
Yep.
But yeah, that game was weird, but it was incredible. Even if I was playing with kids, like, that was still an experience. That was hilarious. I think, you know, because it still had that party game aspect to it. I'm really curious to know what, like, high-level play of that game sounds like, where people are, like, actually making music. I'm curious about ways to, like, you know, like, sometimes it was, like, what if we make it longer sequences? What if we make it, like, actually turn-based? Because there's,
I mean, nobody is actually policing, like, you didn't make the right noises to enter that room, right?
Right.
Like, it's just kind of people are doing stuff.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that.
It's almost like how to run a dungeon, but, like, here's a game on how to make music.
Kind of. Here is a framework, like, to make a bunch of noise with your friends in.
And what comes out of it we will call music. She said experimental music a lot, and
I mean, depending on the willingness of everyone to listen to each other and attune to the noises that everyone else is making, you're making something more or less like music.
Yeah. Regardless of what you have to say about music, it is a collaborative effort, surely.
Yeah.
And that's like a couple of the cards are like, you know, like get someone's attention and play a duet. But like I could see things about it like, you know, people have to like keep rhythm as somebody is taking a turn and then playing it along with that. Like bonuses for people traveling down lines and like ending at the same time to show that you had sort of the same tempo.
You had the
like,
same groove together.
Like there's ways that I could see it to like, you know, what is it? You know, same sort of thing. You give points to encourage the behavior you want. So, you know, give points to encourage music that sounds better in a sense. And then just like here's all the challenges that will make you make music. If you can make better music out of it, you'll get more points in some sense, or working that backwards somehow. It was a really interesting thing.
And especially like if you're playing with the no talking thing, just like looking at somebody across the table, looking at what they've done for the past two turns, realizing, oh, both of us need to go down this hallway together. Yeah. Let's fucking groove.
Yeah. Like it was.
Oh man, that sounds really fun.
Yeah, no, it was fun. I would like to play like a version of that game about three iterations from now, I think. Like there are certain things that I would do with it, because like I said, like it feels like it's sort of at a crossroads. Like it's trying to do this one thing, but in regards to music creation,
yeah,
and as a game, it is sitting at a crossroads between two interesting things. I feel. But yeah, that's interesting. But yeah, I'll put some links, and like there's people have websites to check out. There's things. There's, you know, company games. There's a thing you can go buy.
Yeah.
There's a thing you can go buy, which is really fun. Triple Delight's really fun.
Yeah.
Especially if you have like at least like four or five people. And yeah, that was my time at Spielbunny.
Rad.
Yeah. Spin and Liku Studios podcast. Talk about Spielbunny. I will put links to the interesting stuff we talked about in the show notes. Show notes can be found at alikustudios.net/podcast.
If you'd like to send us feedback, ask us questions, you can send us an email at podcast@alikustudios.net.
You can also find us on Twitter at aliku, at facebook.com/aliku, and at aliku.tumblr.com.
If you like the show and would like to leave a rating or review, you can find us in the iTunes Music Store as well as the Zune Marketplace.
I want you to not forget that if you're going to Aliku Studios to check out the podcast, also check out the comics that we have up there. We have the mech fight thing is up on the site. I think it lives in a Google Doc somewhere.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I don't remember if it was any good. It probably wasn't. But I did create a robot. I believe it was the GameStation Wii 60. There was also one that was the Great Gun Kaiser.
What are you talking about right now?
So that Sissy Fight game?
Oh, yeah, okay.
When I remade it, I rebranded it with Max.
Oh, okay.
So I just made up a whole bunch of mech names.
Okay.
But yeah, so we have more stuff to put up there, and as we have a chance, you know, we're always trying to make stuff. We always have webcomics. Sometimes we put out videos. Sometimes we put out new game things. We do mods. I put out a Unreal level demo reel once.
A while back, I bought a USB capture card with the intent of doing a Let's Play of Phantom Brave, and then the thing turned out to be broken, so I returned it.
Are they going to, like, send you a replacement?
I just wanted my money back, because it had already been proven that one of those was crap.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
You get your money back?
Yeah.
Good. Oh, we gotta invest in something. Dude, let's invest.
Okay.
Put it all into pork now. Let's cook some ribs.
And this has been the Aliku Studios podcast. I hope you have a fantastic day, Nick.
And until next time, we're reminding you to give credit where credit is 25 cents per play.
Ba-da-boom.
Yes.